The Trust for Sustainable Living presents Speaking of Sustainability, a podcast about the environment and the issues our planet faces. Today we will be talking to John Paul Joseph as part of our mini-series on climate action in response to the UN Climate Change Conference. Today's episode is hosted by Jasmine Barron.
Hello everyone, today I am thrilled to be able to host John Paul Jose from India, a young climate activist taking action on climate change. First things first, let's meet today's guest. So John Paul, can you introduce yourself?
Hi everyone, my name is John Paul Jose. I am from Kerala, India. I'm a student and also an environmental and climate activist.
Thank you so much for joining us today. It is wonderful to be able to get to talk to you. One of the things that we wanted to start our conversation with today is to ask you about the non-governmental organisations that you've worked with. We can see and from our research know that you have worked with so many different organisations, including Greenpeace, the Tree Lovers, TED, and now the High Seas Alliance. So can you tell us a bit more about the organisations that you've worked with and who was your favourite?
So I began volunteering, I think, when I was in school for like small clubs. But when I reached college, it was like I began to more get involved with like civic groups. And one of which was Tree Lovers, which we engaged in planting trees and protecting trees in urban space. And I was one of the founding members. And that was the beginning. Then it went up to organizations like Greenpeace, where like we began to like organize campaigns and talk about air pollution in Delhi, then river pollution, and also organizing protests. Then recently with the Youth Ambassador of High Seas Alliance, then also part of TED Countdown. But more the favorite, I would say it's Greenpeace, because like it was before the pandemic, like I was get much involved, like almost more than almost two years, I would say. Then mostly organizing campaigns and also engaging in diverse topics and also a lot of on-ground activities, like going to schools, institutes, talking about those sustainable issues, then about climate change, pollution, all those, like it was like diverse involvement within a specific organization. Yeah.
So you were just talking about organizing protests as part of your work with Greenpeace. Could you tell us a bit more about that?
Yeah, so with Greenpeace, we were mostly involved in like environmental issues within Delhi, like air pollution, then the pollution in Yamuna River. At the same time, talking about climate change, like something which is like not as like a popular issue like that's seen in West, like in West, even if some people know about climate change and the human hand behind that. But when it comes to India, some people know about climate change and only few people know about the human hand in that. So there is a huge gap. So we have been trying to like educate in the institutes and also in public arena, organizing like street plays and all those things when it comes to climate action. And also at the same time, a few small protests were also being organized. But when the climate strikes began, it was easy to like bring diverse environmental organizations existing within the area and also like involvement of young people as well as to make those existing movements into a broader area, incorporating all those issues which we have been including, which we have been fighting, and including them into what we call as climate actions. So all those, like what we have been fighting for, like air pollution or river pollution, all those like movements came into one umbrella of climate activism. So that's how like began to like organize the strikes. At the same time, other activities like centric to Greenpeace, those things as well as continued. So it is not just climate strikes, but along with that sensitization or like negotiations with the governments, all those sort of things continued. Yeah.
Wow, I didn't know that things got as far as negotiations with the government in the things that you were doing. And we were also wondering, how did you get started with environmentalism? You've taken it so far, like I said, up to the governments. Over the years, growing up in India, what changes did you notice in terms of the environment and the climate crisis? How did that inspire you to get involved?
Yeah, so one of the major thing, like I would say, as the beginning for everything is my background. So like one thing is my family come from an agriculture family, and we live in a mountain region, and we have on the both side of our house we have two streams and also like a semi forest area around. So that's the kind of landscape. So this agriculture actually connected more to the nature, and at the same time living amidst nature actually helped to be involved with the nature. So most of the time we spend time outside, like just like normal kids, like playing around, all those like. So but when I moved to cities for studies, it was difficult because like to go out, it means only like public parks, those crowded parks, and it's like artificial benches, all those things that were the like lifestyle that was difficult for me. So that's how I began to like join some civic groups and also like co-founding to get engaged myself with what I have been doing here, like planting trees or protecting forests or like observing birds. So to get those things to be students also at the same time while learning about all those things. And also during free time, I had gone to library and read a lot about environmental social issues. So at that time, I was thinking like, yeah, social issues was something which was prominent in India, even in politics. So like when a social movement comes up, then immediately there is a policy change or like a political upheaval. And also when it comes to environmental issues, there used to be something. And when it comes to climate change, there wasn't any movement or there wasn't any actions or like any policy mechanisms to address climate crisis. So that's how I, from focusing more on social issues, I began to focus more on environment, ism, and also at the same time began to focus more on climate change because those two things get encompassed in climate activism in the form of climate justice. So it's an urgent need of the time. And also when I was city and also when I come back home, I was able to see those kind of changes which I saw in the city, like existing forest or existing trees being cut down and like increasing urbanization, all those things I was able to see in my rural area. So I was wrong about like what I thought, like we are like in the remote area, so those things happen all in the city. So like large-scale plantations coming up, like it's in more related to like what the recent reports say, like many trees are becoming extinct. So those plantations are coming up, and some trees, like I haven't seen them for years. Like since childhood, I used to see some small plants and small trees, but now after like 10, 15 years, I haven't seen them like anywhere. Then also like those birds or those used to come like 15 years ago when I was a child, I couldn't see those things. Then recently, like large scale quarrying are coming up. Because like our state and also like large part of peninsular India is like prone to storms and also mainly sea level rise. So they use sea walls to combat that. But sea walls are being made using rocks being mined from those hilly regions, especially those protected area and fragile landscapes. And also what we call the Western Ghats is a UNESCO World Heritage Site. Due to rich biodiversity. And so it's like we say like we have to protect one with the destruction of another. So all those stones are being quarried and taken out of these mountains and seawalls are being built. But at the same time, there was also a report saying like seawalls are not a solution for rising sea level. So it's like we could see like those greenwashing kind of things, like science says something, but when it comes to policy, something else is on action. So those environmental issues used to be something which always affecting the livelihood of people. And with climate change, it's something like a double whammy from the government and also from the climate. People are suffering at both the ends.
Thank you. You've covered a lot there. One of the things I wanted to pick up on there actually was climate justice, which is one of the things we're talking a lot over the year up here at Trust for Sustainable Living. For people who haven't heard of climate justice, could you give us a bit of information about what it is and maybe how you're working to help climate justice?
Yeah. So when it comes to climate change, we know like it's mostly being affecting like vulnerable people, like especially people in global south, because like for years the impact of climate change has been affecting in the ways of storms, floods, extreme temperature, heat. At the same time, recently Europe saw one of these extreme weather events, but that became a major news and saying like, oh, we also felt climate change. But so then we think about justice, but what about like people in global south who have been being affected by those things? And also at the same time, people in a global south have been facing historic injustice. That is, since the beginning of colonialism, then transformation of nature, then industrialization, and also social injustice that is inherent in the system and that the politics carry on for its own benefit. So with that existing things, we have to ensure justice, we have social justice. And along with that, when these people are already in vulnerable positions, then comes the climate crisis. So that's like when they are dependent on more on nature, and when the dynamics of nature change, they are going to be the most impacted. So like us who are involved in agriculture, we face huge loss in changes in weather pattern. So agriculture, like the crops, everything will become lost. And also changing like issues of flooding, then the landscapes, all those areas are very much vulnerable. So that's why it's important, like there was historic injustice, and with climate crisis, we are going to be hardly hit and going to be getting displaced. So when we get displaced, it's again an injustice because we like policy or mechanism never think of all those things to that extent where like justice means like, yeah, the climate crisis is coming, so we have to displace them. So keep some temporary shelter. Then they call it as justice, but justice is just protecting the prolonged way or the culture or heritage that have been providing them a livelihood. And most importantly, that something which actually had them to connect with nature and protecting nature. So climate justice in like in a real sense or in short sense, it's like protecting people from the larger impact of climate change, especially in a global south, because global south, the frequency of climate crisis is very much high, and with existing socioeconomic situations and with the climate crisis, there is going to be grave injustice because nothing is being done to protect these people. So justice means enabling their continuity in their livelihood and also living conditions, and also at the same time, like helping them in all needs, whether it's a social crisis or a climate crisis, assisting them in all those aspects, rather than just focusing on advanced societies or helping more of those polluters, like giving subsidies for affluent people or like making cities more resilient, so and downgrading other regions. So justice means in climate area as well as how we like deal with climate change, whether it's mitigation, adaptation, or resilience, those things should happen to everyone in an equal manner. Because like we can't say like, yeah, the flood is coming, so Netherlands will have like better flood management system. But what about like other countries, especially India or recently in the Philippines or like all those areas which is being affected? What about those countries? Shouldn't they require any flood control mechanisms? So that's the like idea about it. Yeah.
It seems like you guys are working on some very important causes, but one of the things that I was researching for our talk with you today was that you've spoken about a sense of ageism in activism and policy discussion in India, especially when it comes to higher level discussions. You know, you feel like the youth have been left out. Why do you think that is?
Yeah. So previously, what we had from like environmental perspective as environmental activism, So that was like adults dealing with adults, like adult citizens dealing with like the politicians or like the leaderships or legislature who were actually adults. So, but when it comes to climate change or the climate activism, it's mostly young people, like dealing with people sometimes double their age or triple their age. So it's a difficult situations where like we kind of see like young people who are 18 plus as adults. And at the same time, we see like 30, 40, they are mature. And those comes in between, they are still young or like inexperienced. Because there is a certain threshold in which like we kind of measure like the abilities of people. Because like people who are under 30, they should be inexperienced. They should be following the conventional way of like schooling, job, or like miniature family life. So that's like systems, existing control mechanisms. So if a child of the age behave like 20, 25, that they consider something is wrong because that doesn't acknowledge that maturity, because that's like something out of what adults call as like their like conventional maturity, which they have been determining. So when it comes to those policy discussions, I think the first thing they would say like, you're just a student, you are studying, and you came across the issue of climate change. That doesn't make you someone meritorious to talk about climate change because there are like better experts. But when we look back to history, like including those history of all those nations, the like young people were one of the leading factor behind formation of many nations because those movement actually build those nations because the movements led by young people, the movements led by school students, university students, those actually are the major strikes that began the issue of like the idea of social transformation. So it's very much difficult to ignore the involvement of young people, whether it is in movement or policy discussions. So this is a kind of ignorance, like deliberate ignorance of youth voices, to not to be on the limelight and continue to whitewash all their black hands.
So, in terms of ageism and young people being involved in policy discussion, how do you think young people can get involved? How can they change it so that they are more respected and that their opinion is seen as valuable? What are the next steps for young people in making sure that their voice is heard?
So the major thing that is needed is activism, because activism is something which is at the beginning of like sensitizing people about like the like inaction in the policies. Because like when the place where climate action fails, that's where the climate activism begins. So it's important like we have climate activism, but larger the climate movement, the larger its influence on the policy. Because like for example, like a country like India, like 140 crore people, and if like 100 or like 100,000 people striking, that doesn't make any difference because that is not going to influence. And when it comes to the climate movement in Europe, especially in countries like Germany or other areas, more than like 4.5 million people were striking like those areas. So that means like it's a considerable number. So when the number increases in the movement, it's like 25% of citizens or more than 50% of the country is striking, then that is something which is hard to ignore because half of the country is protesting. Then that becomes something like a vote bank because like we have to appease them. So there should be something inclusive in the policy. So, but there might be some greenwashing, but still that kickstarts some momentum in the policy. So that's why it's important to have activism. Second thing is like getting involved within the system. Because like sometimes we have those systems where like we have like democratic systems where like we have those voices or we have those positions where actually we could contest or like we could get involved. So that's something we could actually get into the system, which actually derails all those progress of like what we call as like the justice and like circle it back to more of like climate justice or social justice. Because so like either we have to work outside of the system and get inside the system to derail it. Then third comes like our like NGOs or like institutes or other organizations which we work with or we found or we kind of like collectively organize or network, because like a collective of few organizations or like the like power of few organizations, if it's getting larger and bigger, then it have like wider audience, then wider acceptability within the region. And another thing is like regionalizing movements or regionalizing the voices, because when it comes to a particular region, sometimes those areas have a, like a government or anything which actually has more power or like more of the power that comes from the that region itself. Because when we have a very much centralized like government or anything, it's actually power coming from top to bottom. And so when it comes to we have it of decentralized government, we have actually power that comes from the root. So that means if it's a particular region of like population 100,000, that means all those policy concerning those areas can be influenced when the people of those area comes to power in that area. And if those area people in those area have a similar interest and they are in power, then none of the changes like ecological destruction or those changes cannot happen there. That's why it's important to have decentralized governance, and also at the same time getting those community members or leaders who are actually doing something or are deliberate on making changes, they have to come into this governance system. Then it has to go through all the tiers. So when we have a collective of this local government governance, then we have an extra tier of like federal structure. Then we have to move up to the central system. So we need a complete transformation that should happen from the grassroots.
So in terms of ageism and young people being involved in policy discussion, how do you think young people can get involved? How can they change it so that they are more respected and that their opinion is seen as valuable? What are the next steps for young people in making sure that their voice is heard?
Yeah, so like when it comes to actions, like I follow like a three kind of track. So one is individual actions. That is like all those actions we take in our daily life, because like how we used to live, then how we are living now, like all those things, and then our travel, our conceptions. So how we align them with our idea of sustainability. So that's a one track of action. Second thing is those collaborations, because some areas we might not be having like larger actions as individuals. In those areas, we work with like-minded people, organizations who are actually doing something, or who have larger capability or potential to do something. So that's why important to have those collaborations. And third comes something like activism, when we have like more of mobilization power and we have more of like area of dispersal to get our actions and demands on the air. So these areas as well as is something which actually motivates and also inspires everyone. And in that, collaborations are something important, because like in areas where like we cannot strike or we cannot be in the forefront of like activism or having issues in criticizing the government, we have to collaborate in areas with others like NGOs, institutes, or other young people or other youth groups. That's where we work with them and we are not working for them. That voices get highlighted and those things comes into limelight. So that's why we have to work with them. And working for them means it seems more of an industrial thing and we might get exploited. And also we have to diversify. So focusing on one thing, we might be succumbed to attacks, because like you are not doing anything and you're just like warmongering or like being an alarmist. At the same time, you are not anything. Doing anything. So when we do all those diverse actions, because I collaborate, I do individual changes and also do a lot of diverse actions and also into activism, then that means we have different areas to focus on. And also it helps people to actually know like which areas they could do as well, is because yeah, everybody is in the activism and I can't do that. What should I do? Then there are some people in NGOs, yeah, or there are people who are running NGOs and doing something, so that might be a good option for me to start with. So people actually who want to do something and doesn't know where to start, so they need some options. So that's how even I have like kind of outlined like this kind of three ways in which how people can get involved. And the more kind of we get involved, the more we get to know about the nature and injustice, it's more often like we end up in activism, because like we kind of get into it and we kind of know more about the seriousness and urgency of the issue. And it's sometimes difficult to do what we are doing now and continue to move forward with that. Rather, we kind of end up in activism. And also like the kind of social media, when we kind of spread those messages and also like kind of outlaying all those ideas we have, it's very much easy for the audiences to get know about it and also dispensing the messages. So it's like people as a wider audience are getting to know about those things and also like looking forward to how they could actually do similar kind of things in their area. Yeah.
So in terms of all the actions that you've done so far, do you find that in India, more people are listening to you and taking it seriously?
Yeah, so when it comes to India, like it's not like a movement is being built. Rather, it's more like actions coming up. Because like many people have a feeling like when we demand action, we should have a government who could act. So we doesn't have a government that could act because they're ignorant and is hell-bound on not to act. So in that case, people become the actors. So instead of the government or corporates as a larger entity having influence on 100% of the country, like almost like 10, 100, and thousands of individuals taking actions into their hand and having a considerable impact on like 10% of the populations or like 1 or 5%. And in that 1% again comes like another 10% or another 1%. So it's actually kind of like building kind of people into this momentum, because unlike West, many people doesn't know about like climate change or climate justice. So one way all those innovations or actions are something which is sensitizing Indians about the issue of climate change. And on other side, it's mostly of innovative solutions like practicing sustainability in agriculture, in technology, in energy. Then there are also like practicing innovations in restoration and also like availability of water. So those things are coming up more rather than like what we say kind of activism. And these actions, as well as the kind of existing movements, are actually making more people to know about the issue of climate change and climate crisis. And also like recent experience with how climate crisis is being felt. Like media never showed like it's climate crisis. They just say it's something, a natural disaster. But the activists or the like who are into the movement or these innovators, they have been able to show this as climate crisis. So many people take this seriously, because why media is silent on that? And many experts are talking this as something as climate crisis. So that also motivate more people to get involved. So this is actually a movement that is being built in disguise or like in a like sleeping state. But like it's not like a like an outbreak happening at a like immediately like what happened in Europe or anything. So it's something like a feeling like it's something like a building in a sleeping state.
If you had the opportunity to speak to all of the world leaders right now and you got to sit down, talk to them face to face about the climate crisis, what would you say?
Yeah, just like look into the reality and think about the future. It's like they are thinking about future, but forgetting the reality, because like governments are important, because like they have to foresee the future and they have to make plans and policies for like next 5, 10, 50 and 100 years, because their policies and actions are going to be permanent and impact all of the populations. If that doesn't take into account the reality or the future uncertainty and just continue to plan for the future from within their shoes, it's difficult because like crisis comes after crisis and we might just like change the shoes but be in the same place. So it's like difficult situations. Like people or the leaders have to accept the reality and continue to look forward to the future by this like knowledge of their mistakes and how they could excel in future.
Accepting the reality, I think that perfectly sums it up. You know, to a certain extent, when you look at the world leaders, it almost seems like they're trying to kid themselves. You know, accepting the reality is the perfect sentence for that, I think. Thank you so much for talking to us today. We really appreciate it, and we hope that you continue to have success with all of your activism and actions that you're taking in India.
Thanks a lot for this opportunity, and also like just like wonderful discussions. Yeah, really enjoyed it.
This has been Speaking of Sustainability, a podcast by the Trust for Sustainable Living. Thank you to today's guest, John Paul Joseph, hosted by Jasmine Barrett, organized by Jasmine Barrett and Sunny Tierney, music by Billy Painter. Find us online by going to trustforsustainableliving.org. Thank you for listening.